Welcome to Beyond Treatment, Conversations for Cancer Survivors. I'm Lisa Johnson-Bleski, your host, the director of the Cancer Center of Western Wisconsin. Thanks for joining us. One of the themes of this series is that recovery does not always happen as quickly or as simply as people hope. Today, we're going to talk about energy, strength, and recovery in a way that feels practical and realistic. I'm joined again by Hannah Hokanson, an oncology dietitian who works with people living with cancer and cancer survivors across the entire journey. Hannah brings a practical, compassionate approach to nutrition and helps patients apply guidance in real life, especially when energy is low and recovery takes longer than expected. Hannah, thanks for coming back again.
Thank you so much for having me.
Today's episode is called Eating for Energy, Strength, and Recovery in Real Life. Fatigue is one of the most common and frustrating challenges survivors face after treatment. Recovery often takes longer than expected. Today we're going to talk about nutrition in a way that feels realistic, supportive, and useful for people who are trying to rebuild strength without adding more pressure. We have a few questions for Hannah today, and the first one I want to know is, why does fatigue linger even after treatment ends?
This is such an important topic to talk about because most people feel that when treatment ends, things should improve quickly and go back to normal, per se. But to experience fatigue after treatment ends, for a while after treatment ends, even up to a year after treatment ends, can unfortunately be normal to some degree.
A whole year.
A whole year. Now, there's many reasons why that could be the case. So we'll talk about a couple of those. One of the reasons may be that during treatment, they were experiencing pretty significant side effects and had inadequate nutrition. So not getting the nutrition that they need. And to recover from that piece of things takes a lot of consistent time and effort to ensure that they're getting the adequate nutrition to help with recovery and rebuild that strength. We may also see a change in someone's eating habits during treatment due to side effects, and that can certainly have an impact on fatigue as well. For example, if someone is nauseous regularly, you know, they may be sticking to blander, you know, more starchier based type foods out of necessity, as that's what they're tolerating best. But some of those foods may not be long-term something that is beneficial in recovering from that fatigue. So sometimes just that change in eating habits because of the side effects that someone has experienced continues into that post-treatment phase, which then can also impact that fatigue symptom as well.
Can you talk more about those eating habits or patterns that best support energy and recovery?
Absolutely. So as far as the patterns go, the ultimate goal would be to get three adequate meals a day. But that may also be very dependent on where someone is at in their recovery. If it's challenging to get those three adequate meals, then a smaller, more frequent eating pattern can really be beneficial to help improve that fatigue. So that may be smaller meals, but then incorporating snacks in between those meals to really ensure that they're getting that adequate nutrition that they need. Again, the concern is if someone is only eating potentially one or two times a day, the lack of nutrition is not going to benefit them from recovery. So trying to get three adequate meals, but again, very much based on where someone is at, that small frequent eating pattern can also be of benefit. Now, as far as types of foods to help support energy and recovery, that's also important. So the eating pattern plays a role, but the types of foods also play a role. Adequate protein is incredibly important. Protein will help support and work towards rebuilding of that lean muscle mass. So trying to get good protein foods every time you eat, whether it is a meal or a snack, can be incredibly beneficial for improving energy. It is also helpful when appropriate, based on the day, based on how someone is feeling, to try and incorporate nutrient-dense foods. Now, nutrient-dense foods are foods that have a good variety of vitamins and minerals and fiber, and that's going to help support that energy as well. So that may be fruits, vegetables, whole grains, nuts, seeds, beans, legumes, all great sources of those vitamins, minerals, and fiber. So incorporating protein-based foods, but also as much as possible based on how someone is feeling, those nutrient-dense foods are also incredibly important to help work on recovery from fatigue.
Can you dive a little bit more into the protein? What types of protein should our listeners be aiming for, and is there a certain amount?
Absolutely. So ideally, we would want to meet our protein needs from an array of food sources. So for those patients that eat meat, meat would be a great option. For those patients that eat fish or seafood, that would also be a great option. Eggs, great protein source. For those that choose to include dairy, milk, cottage cheese, yogurt would also be great sources. Beans and legumes like kidney beans, garbanzo beans, black beans, that would also be a great protein source. Nuts and nut butters are a great protein source. And tofu, although probably not super popular with most people, would also be a great protein source. So ideally, within reason, if someone can eat an array of those protein food sources, that would be the goal. If that is a challenge, that's where things like nutrition supplements or protein powders can be beneficial to help someone meet their protein needs. Again, that protein piece of things is incredibly important in recovery and improvement of fatigue as we work to maintain and rebuild that muscle mass. As far as a certain amount, it is quite dependent on the patient and what their recovery needs are. It can vary anywhere from 1 to 1.5 or even higher grams per kilograms, just depending on the patient and their situation. For example, for protein needs for someone that is 150 pounds and is working on rebuilding that strength, a goal protein for them would be 80 to 100 grams of protein per day, and that would again be based off of 1.2 to 1.5 grams per kilogram to help with that improvement in their muscle mass.
Thank you. For your patients that are lactose intolerant, what type of milk source would you recommend for them?
So they could go with a basic lactose-free milk that would be comparable to a cow's milk, or they could do a soy milk. Those would be good options that still incorporate a good amount of protein. A cow's milk or a soy milk generally has 8 grams of protein per cup. I do often caution with more of the nut-based milks, while still, you know, a good option to incorporate based on preference, they do tend to be quite low in protein. Some of them containing like almond milk or cashew milk, as low as 1 gram of protein per cup.
I find that really fascinating because I thought the nut-based milk, especially almond, would have a higher content of protein.
Yeah, so helpful definitely to look at the food label and see the grams of protein per serving size or per cup. But just some knowledge to put out there.
I appreciate that. That's so helpful. I want to know what general cancer prevention guidance should survivors know?
What a great question. So I would ultimately recommend people to look into the American Institute of Cancer Research guidelines. They have guidelines and recommendations for cancer prevention and risk reduction. So risk reduction of cancer recurrence, risk reduction of a secondary cancer. There's an array of those recommendations, but I do want to touch on a couple of those. They're all important, but from maybe a nutrition aspect, a little bit more important in my realm of things, especially on the topic of fatigue. One of the recommendations, and we've touched a little bit on this, is to regularly include those nutrient-dense or plant-based foods. And the reason for that is they're just so full of vitamins and minerals and fiber, which is, again, important for overall health, decreasing risk of chronic diseases, and ultimately reducing that risk of cancer development or recurrence or secondary cancer. So to review, those nutrient-dense foods or those plant-based foods would be fruits and vegetables. Of course, we've heard that time and time again, but there's just so much evidence to support the benefit of those fruits and vegetables. And when it comes down to fruits and vegetables, the more variety that you get, the better. When we think about variety, we want to try and aim for a variety of colors of fruits and vegetables. And that's important because we're getting slightly different vitamins and minerals from the different colored fruits and vegetables. So that food group, incredibly beneficial and important. Beans and legumes are also very nutrient-dense foods. The nuts, all varieties of nuts are fantastic. Nut butters are very nutrient-dense foods. And then whole grains are also lumped into that category too, where we're going to get vitamins and minerals and fiber from, you know, things like wild rice, brown rice, quinoa, 100% whole wheat bread, oats, that would also fall into that category. Another recommendation that is within the American Institute of Cancer Research guidelines that can be incredibly important in recovering from treatment, especially the fatigue component, is exercise. That can be quite limited during treatment just because of that fatigue, because of that decrease in energy. So working slowly to increase exercise is very beneficial to recover from fatigue. It's important to incorporate a variety of exercise types too within reason, you know, cardiovascular, resistance, weight bearing. And this is one area that if someone is struggling with this, I think really important to get involved with physical therapy. That can be an important discipline to help patients realistically and gradually increase their strength and start to incorporate more exercise. One other piece of the American Institute of Cancer Research guidelines that I do want to touch on from a nutrition standpoint would be limiting or avoiding alcohol. This can certainly play a role in fatigue, but it also can be an incredibly important recommendation for certain cancer types. So that might not be something that is talked too much about when we think about nutrition as a whole, but I think it is an important guideline to touch on is what is someone's alcohol consumption. The recommendations for women is to limit to one alcoholic beverage a day or less. And again, the American Institute of Cancer Research provides the amount for that. And for males, it would be two beverages a day or less. If we're exceeding that, again, that can contribute to fatigue, but also when we think about long-term goals, I think that's an important topic to discuss.
It's really helpful to know these recommendations. Where do we start? What would you recommend to our listeners would be a great place to start? because it sounds like a lot of things. And I'm thinking about myself personally, like, whew, I got to change this, this. I also know I can't boil the ocean. So where do you recommend people start?
I think ultimately it's helpful to know what the recommendations are. Again, I've just kind of broached on some of them. So the American Institute of Cancer Research website is a good starting point just to kind of read through those. But like you said, you cannot do it all at once. And oftentimes when I am educating someone, when we are talking about survivorship and long-term goals, and we go through these recommendations, it can be very overwhelming. Because like you said, you think about, oh my gosh, like, okay, I need to incorporate more nutrient-dense foods. I should be limiting, you know, energy-dense foods or foods that are high in sugar. I should be exercising. I should be watching my alcohol intake. That sounds extremely overwhelming. The most important thing to set yourself up for success is to think about small, gradual changes. I often tell patients, you pick one or two things to work on. You focus on that. Once you feel like you've made that change and it has become a lifestyle habit, then, okay, maybe you pick another thing and you focus on that. But yes, if you feel like you need to completely overhaul everything and maybe you try that, you know, kudos to anyone that can be successful with it, but typically any drastic change like that is not sustainable long term. So to make these a lifestyle change and incorporate these healthy habits long term, it truly has to be small and it has to be gradual. So for patients that maybe don't eat fruits and vegetables regularly, maybe that is the one thing that they're going to focus on, is how can I incorporate fruits or vegetables more often in a meal or in a snack? And sometimes it takes effort to dive into that, about how that's feasible. And then, okay, I'm making progress with this. I'm feeling good about it. Maybe I can, you know, start to incorporate a little bit more exercise. So really taking it piece by piece and building off of that, but also knowing that it's not going to be good progress every day. You know, sometimes we have our bad days and that's okay. Or sometimes, you know, there's just seasons of life or seasons within the calendar year, holidays in particular, that are more challenging, and that's okay. It's what the trajectory or the trend is of these changes. And giving yourself grace. You know, if you maybe had a bad, and I don't necessarily want to use the term bad, because everything fits within reason. But if there was maybe a more challenging meal or a more challenging day, that doesn't mean you need to throw your goals out the window. You can still make progress. If it's, you know, holiday season, yeah, maybe a little self-reflection, and just knowing that it's normal to experience some tougher times in there. But when we break it down into that small, gradual change, it's going to be more sustainable long term.
Okay, I feel better about that. I think that is really great advice. So just a gradual, one thing at a time. When that is going well, then add another. That's really good. So no boiling the ocean at once. Perfect. So I want to switch gears a little bit, because this is something that I often hear. How do taste changes and appetite issues impact fatigue?
This can be incredibly impactful on fatigue, and kind of what it boils down to is potentially that inadequate nutrition or inadequate food groups, and there's very legit reasons for that. Taste changes in particular, when we think about eating, we of course get nourishment from it, but there's also very much an enjoyment piece of eating. Potentially there's a social piece of enjoyment factor in that too. So for someone that's experiencing taste changes, eating can be challenging for so many reasons. And that can impact fatigue because they're really trying to navigate what foods and food groups or flavor profiles are working well for them. As far as appetite issues, again, that can really be impactful on adequate nutrition because if your body is not cueing you naturally that you're hungry, you know, you're having to force yourself to eat, you don't really have a desire to eat, you could be facing that inadequate nutrition, which, as we talked about earlier, can really lead to fatigue or compound fatigue or, you know, hinder a little bit of that recovery. So it's important to navigate, you know, as much as feasible or possible, navigate those side effects with a dietitian. So, you know, you can delve and dive into that a little bit deeper to ultimately help you long term.
Thank you. Thank you for that. I have a final question. It's going to be a twofold. So when should survivors reconnect with a dietitian, and what reassurance would you offer fatigued survivors when they do reconnect?
So reconnecting with a dietitian, honestly, would be beneficial at any point that anyone is struggling. You know, if it's been a couple months since completion of treatment, you're still feeling fatigued, you still feel like eating or choosing the right foods is challenging, that would be a great time. You know, if it's been 6 months, if it's been a month, if it's been 12 months, really there's no wrong time to connect with a dietitian because they can help you with pieces that maybe you're missing. Or, I mean, that's truly a dietitian's profession, is to help navigate that. And I would advocate that if possible, if you have the option to see a dietitian through your cancer center, that would certainly be ideal, just because they may have more knowledge as far as, you know, symptom management and foods for recovery. But if that isn't an option, I think important to have that discussion with your primary care physician and request a dietitian through the primary care clinic as well, too. As far as reassurance for fatigue survivors, one of the worst recommendations or statements is time, but honestly knowing that things will get better with time. It's important to set realistic expectations and focus on that consistency. You know, it's, I think, very challenging of, I've completed treatment, why am I not feeling better? Why am I not back to normal? But when you can understand and grasp that there can be lingering side effects longer than desired, when you have those realistic expectations and you're consistently working on some of the things that we've talked about, it truly will get better with time.
Thank you so much, Hannah, for being with us today and sharing your expertise. Your passion shines through. I really appreciate it.
Thank you so much for having me. Again, it's a very important topic to discuss, and I'm happy to share my knowledge and thoughts.
As a reminder, the information shared in this episode is meant to support and guide you. It is not a substitute for your own medical care. If questions come up or something resonates with you today, we encourage you to talk with your oncology care team or primary care provider. They know your history best and can help you decide what next steps are right for you. You do not have to navigate survivorship alone. Thanks for joining us today. Wherever you are in your survivorship journey, we are glad you are here.